So do you know what is PASSEX? PASSEX. Now, many of you are nerds, defense nerds, so I'm sure all of you knew it. For me, I always learn something new, and that's what keeps me going. So I learned this expression today, PASSEX. That is the exercise that the passing US fleet, that is the USS Nimitz battle group, and a bunch of Indian Navy ships participated in. So this was an exercise close to the Andamans area. So once again, very crucial area. This fleet, this American fleet, has come in through Malacca Strait, which is an international choke point, very important for China, also where India has very strong presence because of the Andamans. All that's okay. Now, what is PASSEX? PASSEX actually means very little. It means something like, let me try and simplify it as I always do, or try to do at least. You know of a flag march, what happens when some place has a riot and it's not coming under control, then you get the army to carry out a flag march, or you get the BSF or one of those other forces, forces other than the local police, that people will take more seriously. They carry out a flag march. So it's not as if people come marching down your streets carrying a flag. That is just a name. This PASSEX business between US and Indian navies was a little bit like that. You know that USS Nimitz is the largest warship in the world. It has more than almost 100 combat aircraft, plus helicopters, plus. So PASSEX in an old fashioned way would be exchanging of signals, semaphores, smoke signals, etc. Today it will be also aligning your electronics together, your systems together, also your electronics in terms of identifying your common foes and adversaries, etc. But still, it is the naval equivalent of a flag march. Now, if Indian and American navies are carrying out the naval equivalent of a flag march, then who's the bad guy they are signaling to? No big deal guessing, it is China, because the Chinese have been pushing several countries in that neighborhood, Australia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Vietnam, Taiwan, etc., 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 but also India now in the mountains. So this is an expression, this is a show of flag, not literally, this is a show of flag, a flag march to say that we will be there and we are a much stronger force than you thought you were going to take on. So this is a symbolic thing. Now, why we are talking about this is that this tells you how this world has changed. Because just 50 years ago, I mean, I say just 50 years ago, it looks like I'm understating a period of time. But the fact is, anything that happens in one lifetime, one generation's lifetime, was still recent. So 50 years ago, in the same location, another US task force had come sailing in. That was the task force headed by USS Enterprise. Then a big, powerful aircraft carrier. That was in December 1971. You would remember that 3rd December 1971, the India-Pakistan war started, and then America was a very close ally of Pakistan. Pakistan had helped the Americans, that is Nixon, Kissinger, to establish a secret relationship with the Chinese leadership to isolate the Soviet Union. In fact, that's what turned the Cold War in the end. In gratitude and also as an ally, the Americans were committed to defending Pakistan. Now, no country comes and fights for you to defend yourself, not at least until you seem to be losing or you are in a bad way. But once again, you make a show of force. So the Americans sent a task force led by USS Enterprise, task force from 7th Fleet, US 7th Fleet, that came in, and that was coming in at its own pace. And if you watch some, what some historians have been writing and saying, probably that was to make sure that once the job in the eastern sector is done, because it was very difficult for anybody in the world to defend the Pakistani army after what it had done in East Pakistan. given the atrocities, genocide, mass rape, terrible things they had done there. And India had more than 1 crore refugees in 1971. It was a lot of people. Nevertheless, so this task force came. It actually came ahead of where it might have been today in this exercise with Indian ships. It came much closer, in fact, quite close to Sri Lanka by December 16. So you will see some maps and pictures that will tell you where this exercise took place. You will also see some pictures of the exercise which Indian Navy has released. But in 1971, they came very close to Sri Lanka. At a pinch, their aircraft could have operated over the battle zone, which was East Pakistan or anywhere over India, but that was not the intention. What was the intention? The intention was to say, all right, you've done what you wanted to do in East Pakistan. Obviously, the first expectation was that this will shore up the morale of the Pakistani forces in the East and they will fight better. That didn't happen. Now, the second thing was that, look, if that is over, be done with it and we'll go back. Which means if India had then shifted forces from the Eastern Front to the Western Front and maybe try to dismantle Western Pakistan itself, then there was a threat of intervention. Once again, a show of flag. And if you go back to that war, you also know that India was able to go that far and also look the Americans in the eye as hostiles, mainly because India had signed a treaty of peace, friendship and cooperation, as it was called, but it was a strategic alliance with the Soviet Union. So Soviet Union, in a way, had guaranteed India's security or had guaranteed India protection from a third party intervention in that war. But that was a limited lease. It was quite evident that even the Soviet Union had let Mrs. Gandhi know that it's okay until you liberate East Pakistan. But we will not have the patience or strength or ability or inclination to go ahead with you and continue backing you if you decided to continue the war in the Western theater as well. So that's what happens when nations come together. Big nations rarely come to your side to fight for you. A Vietnam kind of situation, an Afghanistan kind of situation rarely happens. Usually it does happen when the side you are backing loses out. So this is an important event. We have to notice the significance of this event. And remember, when countries fight wars, ideally the countries conduct their diplomacy in such a way that they don't have to fight a war. But if they fight a war, then if it's just a defensive war against an enemy that's not stronger than you, say India-Pakistan 1965, you can do it without an ally. If it's a defensive war against a much more powerful adversary, then it's difficult to defend yourself without an ally, as happened between India and China in 1962. Now, if it is not a defensive war, if it's a war in which you have a definite strategic or territorial objective, which you have to attain even against an enemy which may not be as strong as you, you do need an ally, as India did in 1971 with the Soviet Union as its ally. And next, no country in the world can afford to have a two-front war. So if you face war on one front, then you need alliances to keep your other front quiet, which is what the Soviet Union had done in 1971, and which is what the objective of India's diplomacy should always be. One, that if there is a threat from China, then you need allies to help you fight. If it's a threat from Pakistan, then you should be left at peace to deal with that threat without somebody intervening on Pakistan's side. That is the basic postulate of India's strategic / defense policy. And remember, wars are either avoided or won when your diplomacy, your alliance making, and your defense policy, military policy or strategy align. It happened in 1971. It wasn't that needed in 1965. It did not happen in 1962. And now India and US are indicating to the Chinese that, look, you are, the problems you are creating, you might have to deal with not just one challenger, but more than one challenger. To that extent, this is a turning of the clock. from a US carrier fleet task force coming in as a threat to India. Now it's coming in as a supporter of India. So that is a strategic shift which we thought was worth noticing. Having said that, before I let you go, I will talk about Indian politics a little bit. Because nothing is more fun and nothing is more interesting than India's domestic politics. So something happened today in Jaipur. Ashok Gehlot, who is usually a very soft-spoken man, he lost it a little bit. And in front of TV cameras, in fact, he took off his mask, both literally, which he should not have done. It's a bad example to take off your mask, particularly when you're facing so many cameras close to you, because those cameras pick up a lot of germs. Second, because he set a bad example to others as a public figure. If you go around without a mask, don't point your fingers at me. I'm in my home, sitting by myself. So he did that. But he also took his mask off in terms of his style, because usually you don't expect him to use harsh language. So talking about Sachin Pilot, he called him nikamma, nakara, jisne kuch nahi kiya, wo sirf logon ko ladwata hai, he just makes people fight each other. His contribution is nothing as Congress president in this state.
Hum jante the ki nikamma hai, nakara hai, kuch kaam nahi kar raha hai. खाली लोगों को लड़वा रहा है मेरे साथ हो नहीं हो मैं यहाँ बैंगन बेचने नहीं आया हूँ.
Now this was an outburst, but what caught my eye and my ear in this was the use of the word nikamma, because that word features quite prominently and interestingly and juicily in India's political history, because this wasn't the first time this word was used by anybody. In fact, if you go right back, at least in my memory, you go back to late 90s. That is the expression that Sitaram Kesari, who was then the president of Congress Party, Sonia Gandhi was still outside the Congress Party. Once again, I correct myself, Mrs. Gandhi, we use for Indira Gandhi, for Sonia Gandhi, we say Sonia Gandhi. So Sonia Gandhi had still not taken over the party. Sitaram Kesari was heading the party and Devegowda was Prime Minister. So Sitaram Kesari then called Devegowda a nikamma, and Devegowda responded then, I think in Parliament, saying, yeah, nikamma o kamma, what is this nikamma o kamma, because he's a Kannadiga, what does he know about nikamma? So that was one little instance, and Devegowda paid Sitaram Kesari back by calling him old man in a hurry. You hear young man in a hurry, so he called him old man in a hurry. Then, something more recent, 2008 debate on the nuclear deal and the no trust motion against Manmohan Singh government. L.K. Advani called Manmohan Singh nikamma, and Manmohan Singh then responded to that. By that time, the opposition had walked out, so he placed his written statement in the House, also read it out. It said, Manmohan Singh said, and someone as soft-spoken as Manmohan Singh, he says, he has described me, that is Advani, has described me as the weakest prime minister, a nikamma prime minister, and of having devalued the office of prime minister. To fulfill his ambitions, he has made at least 3 attempts to topple our government. But on each occasion, his astrologers have let him down. This pattern, I am sure, will be repeated today. This is Manmohan Singh talking in Parliament. Think of Manmohan Singh, for him to use such harsh language. He said, at his ripe old age, I do not expect Advani ji to change his thinking. But for his sake and India's sake, I urge him to at least change his astrologers so that he gets more accurate predictions of things to come. So that was the other one. Then there have been many other occasions. Sonia Gandhi once in Parliament described opposition's ideas of coming to power as Mungeri Lal ke Haseen Sapne. In a rally in Ramlila Maidan in 1998, she said for Vajpayee government, Nashna Jane Aangan Teda. Then you also know that Narendra Modi, in the earlier 2004 elections, also said in Gujarat, Jarsi Bachada, that somebody will not get the job of a driver, or nobody should give their house on rent to the Gandhis, etc., etc., which he later in a Walk the Talk interview to me described as a campaign mein, rajniti mein kabhi koi no ball, white ball ho bhi jaati hai. So that is some colorful aspect of our politics. You can go right back, see when Mrs. Gandhi came to power, the Mrs. Gandhi, in late 60s, she did not speak very much in parliament. She seemed very naive and she seemed quite subdued. And that's when Ram Manohar Lohia described her as Gungi Gudiya. Literal translation is not very good. It's not very apt or accurate. But the only thing I can say is a dumb doll. Although dumb, he didn't mean dumb as in dull in the head. He meant dumb as in not able to speak. And see how Mrs. Gandhi then responded to that through her actions. So these exchanges, and today someone as soft-spoken, usually soft-spoken as Ashok Gehlot, using this language also about someone else who's quite soft-spoken, which is Sachin Pilot, reminds us that at the end of the day, politics is also a contact sport. And so what if people don't go and grapple with each other physically, but this kind of verbal attacks can sometimes be quite nasty as well.